This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa.
Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. I'm so glad you're joining us today. It's just 1 week before Christmas, and I thought I'd do something different this year. I thought I'd try writing a Christmas story. So the first part is today, and then next week my broadcast is on Christmas Day, so there will be the concluding part. I thought, well, if Charles Dickens can do this, why can't I? Anyway, we'll see how we go. This story starts out quite sad. In fact, woefully sad. But keep listening, for I guarantee the end will fill you with the Christmas spirit. Looking at London on December 24th, you would think that the world was full of magic. Every shop window was lit up with exquisite decorations. The painted snowflakes were supposed to transport everyone that saw them to a winter wonderland. Everywhere you looked, there were signs telling you to be merry and full of cheer. All the shops were blasting out Christmas music. Andy Williams' version of "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year" could be heard all the way down Oxford Street. Yet the faces of most people didn't show magic, wonder and awe. They showed stress, frustration and dread. Instead of being the most wonderful time of the year for many, it was truly the worst time of the year. Thousands upon thousands were spending money they didn't have. All their credit cards were maxed out. One such man was Basil Thompson. Basil wore a tailored suit, which he could not afford. Then to prove how much he earned, he had six others at home, and he couldn't afford these either. He drove a brand new Mercedes, which was also well out of his price range. Basil had amassed a debt of almost £65,000. With a yearly salary of just £19,000, he thought that he would be in debt for the rest of his life. The debt was overwhelming. He spent many sleepless nights worrying about how he would pay this back. It had all got out of control for him. Basil never wanted this life. He loved gardening, and he would have happily done that, but he wanted a career where people thought he was someone important. Basil struggled. In fact, he was a miserable man. Nothing that he owned gave him any sense of joy. Every time he made an expensive purchase, instead of that joy, he felt regret and sorrow, but he felt he had to keep up this image. And when people did admire him for his car and his suit, that never really lasted, and it never really gave him the happiness that he so desperately wanted. Every day there'd be an email in his inbox saying, "You've got another overdue debt, this one's a late payment, this hasn't been paid." One after another, they came in, and they didn't stop. Basil was truly a miserable man, for he knew no joy. He always worried that his debts would catch up with him, and that one day he would be humiliated and declared bankrupt. He was in so much debt that many times he went without food because he couldn't pay his bills. And yet now Basil was in the centre of London, about to spend more money. Every year he and his sister would have Christmas lunch together. It was his turn to host it. He had already brought several bottles of champagne from Harrods that he could ill afford. And last year his sister brought caviar to the table, so now he felt compelled to do the same. A tiny jar of imperial caviar was £110, and Basil now owned three of them. The faces of all the people on Bond Street were filled with distress, worry, and even terror, for there were many, many there that were spending money that they did not have. Basil felt that he had to keep up with his sister. She had just received a promotion at the bank that she was working at, and she was doing very well. Basil told his sister that he had also been promoted, and that he got top salesman of the year. Both of those were lies, but he didn't feel that he could be honest with her. Just a few years ago, they were each spending about £50 on each other to buy Christmas presents. This was both well within their budgets. But then a few years ago, this changed, and then each year they tried to one-up themselves and buy a more and more expensive present than the previous year. In fact, Basil knew that he hadn't paid off the gifts that he bought 3 years ago, but he felt compelled to spend more and more money. Basil never bought the gifts to make his sister happy. No, it was all about keeping up his image. It was absolutely vital that he maintain the charade of a highly successful businessman. Now he was on Bond Street and looking into the fabulous Louis Vuitton store. The store was immaculate. This was the place where millionaires shopped. It was a place where people with his salary could ill afford to go, and yet he found himself compelled to walk through the door. He took some time to look around, and he asked to see a number of the bags. He pretended to examine them very carefully, pretending to look inside them and look at the stitching in great detail, for he wanted to pretend that he was a connoisseur of luxury handbags. In reality, Basil had no idea what he was doing. He couldn't tell an expensive bag from a cheaper one. But again, he wanted to maintain this image of someone that was important and someone that knew about these things. He casually went over to the store assistant and asked, "How much is this one?" She very casually replied, £899. Basil was extremely careful to look calm on the outside. It was absolutely vital that he maintained this image. But on the inside, his blood started to race, and he was filled with terror. For he knew that if he was to buy this, it would mean much, much more hardship. He put the bag back down on the counter, and he picked up another one. "And this one here?" The person said, "This one is £1,799. Again, Basil took a deep gulp. He knew this would be a disaster if he bought it. Every part of his body was saying, "Don't do this." And yet, he couldn't stand facing his sister with a less than adequate gift. "I'll take the one that's £1,700, please. It's much finer quality. Yes, I think this is the one that I want." The saleswoman took his credit card, put the transaction through, and very casually wrapped it up. Then Basil walked out of the shop. And oh, the dread. The dread, the fear, what had he done? He cursed himself. He said, "You stupid, stupid man, why did you do this?" He knew what trouble this was going to cause in the coming year, and he hated himself for it. Basil thought that he was a failure. On the way back to the car, Basil passed another woman. Her name was Angelica Patterson. She was in her mid-60s and very well dressed. The one thing she had no shortage of was money. But money wasn't what she wanted. She wanted human company. Deep down, she was dreadfully lonely. Whenever she met people, she would tell them that her husband died a few years ago, but she had two sons. And these two sons were always coming over at Christmas and ringing her and looking after her. She had never married. She didn't have two sons. But she was too proud to admit how lonely she really was. So now, on Christmas Eve, she was shopping for her imaginary sons. She would go into stores, talk to the salespeople about her sons. She would talk and talk and talk. Really, what she desperately wanted was that human connection. She would talk to anyone. And that, even though she knew this was a lie, even though she knew that it wasn't real, she was so bitterly lonely, she just wanted an excuse to talk to someone, anyone, even if it was a total stranger. She just wanted someone to be around her. She pretended that she had one son that had just come back from Nepal, and another one that was heading over to Italy in the new year. When she was at the counter of many stores, she would tell the salesperson a long story. Everyone behind her got very frustrated, and yet no one stopped to ask, why might this woman be doing this? As soon as she left the store, she had no need for the gifts, so she found a charity basket, and she deposited the gifts in there as soon as she could. Angelica was a deeply miserable woman. She saw the smiling, joyful, and happy faces of many, many people that she walked down the streets and saw. She longed to have even a glimmer of the happiness that they had. She saw couples holding hands and kissing. When she saw this, she felt a deep, bitter loneliness. She thought that loneliness was the worst kind of sorrow you could feel, and she felt this deep within her soul. On her way, she passed a man named Simon Hargreaves. Simon always looked stern. He never once smiled. He owned several shops on the Strand, and even at this late hour on Christmas Eve, He was going there to make sure that they were making as much money as they possibly could. But deep down, Simon was a very sad man. Growing up, he had a brother that he dearly loved. Some brothers spend all their time fighting, but not Simon and his brother. They got on very, very well indeed. They used to have such magical Christmases together. It was the sort of relationship that many people could only dream about. But Simon hadn't spoken to his brother in almost 20 years. 20 years ago, they got into an argument, and they'd never talked since. His brother had met a woman that he loved very dearly, and one Christmas Eve, he talked to Simon and said, "I want to marry this woman." Simon became angry and filled with rage. He said, "How dare you do this? You don't know this woman. She'll ruin our family." And he said many, many words that he deeply regretted later. Well, that was it. Their friendship was finished. Simon hadn't seen or heard from his brother in over 20 years. He didn't know what happened. Did they get married? Did he have children? In fact, he wasn't even sure he was still alive. Simon kept himself very, very busy. He liked to put on a cold, hard exterior, and he tried to make sure that he was so busy that he would never, ever have to think about this. But try as he might, the thoughts of his brother kept coming back, especially around this time at Christmas, when so many people were with their families. And as much as he didn't want to admit it, over the years he discovered the reasons why he got so angry. He was jealous of this woman. He was scared that they would break up their friendship and destroy the valuable relationship that they had. And deep down, he knew he had done that far better than any woman ever could. And he was miserable for it. But Simon didn't want to face this misery. He buried himself in his work, he kept himself busy, and he wanted to pretend that everything was okay and perfect in his life. But that wasn't the case at all. Simon was just one of many of the miserable souls in London that night. There was such misery on what was supposed to be one of the happiest nights of the entire year. Simon never celebrated Christmas. He never put up a tree, he never put up lights. In fact, he wanted to avoid the season as much as he could. Christmas was supposed to be such a magical time of year, and yet for so many of the people in London, it wasn't. It most certainly wasn't the most wonderful time of the year. In fact, for many of them, it was the absolute worst time of the year. There were many people that were going into stores, buying things they couldn't afford, maxing out their credit cards. The amount of stress, the agony, and the misery that was there in London. It was a terrible, terrible time of year for so many people. And then lastly, we come to Olivia. Olivia was a very, very sad person. Earlier in the year, her sister and her husband had been killed in a car crash. Olivia was all alone, and she was left to raise her sister's children. She didn't know the first thing about motherhood, nor was it something that she wanted at this stage of life. Her sister had two children, James, who was 2, and Fiona, who was 7. She was thrust into motherhood, and she was struggling. First of all, the cost of it was immensely difficult. She had to work 3 jobs just to try and pay the rent and put food on the table. And then James didn't sleep well at night, and he would cry and cry. So Olivia was very, very tired, mind-numbingly tired. In fact, she just wanted to go to bed and sleep and never, ever have to face the world again. Fiona said that she wanted a doll for Christmas, and at first Olivia thought, "This is something we can't afford, I can't get you one." But knowing how much sadness Fiona's life had been filled with, Olivia wanted to try and make her Christmas at least a little bit special. So Olivia was in the centre of London on Christmas Eve. She walked past Hamleys, the world-famous toy store, where people were buying expensive presents. She knew she would never be able to go in here and afford a doll. Instead, she found a discount store in a quiet street. She found the cheapest doll that she could find that was £4.99. She went up to the cashier and handed the doll over. She put her credit card in the machine, and to her horror she saw on the screen, "Declined." She put the doll back and turned her head, making sure that the cashier couldn't see the tears that were running down her face. She felt like a failure. Her daughter wanted a doll that was just £4.99, and she couldn't even afford this. She was about to go home and tell her daughter or her stepdaughter how sorry she was, But knowing what she'd been through this year, she just couldn't manage that. Then she had an idea. It was a bad idea. But she was very sleep deprived, extremely stressed, and wasn't thinking clearly. She wanted to go into a store and steal a doll so that Fiona could have a happy Christmas. She knew that stealing was wrong, and she'd never considered anything like this in her life before. But she was so desperate. She went into a store and she found a nice doll. She hid it under her jacket. But she'd never done something like this before. She was constantly looking round and on edge, and anyone could see that she was up to no good. She walked towards the door and she thought she'd done it, when a man put a firm hand on her shoulder and said, "Excuse me, madam, can I see under your jacket, please?" At that moment her world fell apart. She knew she had been caught. She didn't know what to say or do. She tried to say it was for a child for Christmas, but the store had a blanket policy of always prosecuting. She was taken down to the police station, and she was asked to wait in a cell where she would be charged. And she sobbed. Oh, how she sobbed. Her world was broken. Everything was falling apart. How tragic to be arrested on Christmas Eve. What would her family think of her? What would her children think of her? She remembered when she was a child, what a wonderful time Christmas was. She remembered staying awake as long as she possibly could, waiting to see Santa. The excitement, the anticipation, it was too much to bear. And she remembers the most magical, wonderful Christmases as a child. And she wondered where on earth had that gone now. That magical world that she used to live in had evaporated. And now she was living in a nightmare. And she cried. From the depths of her soul, she cried. And she wondered when this terrible, horrible world would ever end. Just then, there was a knock on the cell door. One of the officers said, "There's someone here to see you." He opened the door, and there was a man in jeans, with a red jacket and a white beard. She'd never seen this man before. The man said, "Do you know who I am?" She was so tired, she had no idea. With the white beard, she said, "Santa Claus?" The man replied, "No, I'm the Easter Bunny. My suit got lost at the dry cleaners. No, I'm not Santa Claus. My name is Jonathan Reynolds." She was totally bewildered. Jonathan said, "I understand that your name is Olivia, and I understand that you had a dream to be an archaeologist, and you had worked your whole life for this, and you were finally offered a scholarship earlier this year to go to Egypt. Your life dream was upon you, and then your sister had a terrible car crash and she was killed. You gave up your life dream to help her children. And now I understand that Christmas has gone very wrong for you. No one plans to spend Christmas in a prison cell." Olivia was dumbfounded. She asked, how do you know all this?" The man said, "I have my sources." "Well, I talked to the owner of that store, and he believes your story, and he's decided to drop the charges. So you're free to go home and see James and Fiona. Oh, and there's one more thing. That doll you wanted? Here it is." And from under his coat, he produced the doll that Olivia so desperately, desperately wanted. Olivia had no idea what was happening. She wondered whether this was some sort of a dream. The stranger that she'd never met before had suddenly freed her from jail. And suddenly, the disaster that was going to be Christmas maybe wasn't going to be so bad. Then the man said, "I also understand you don't have much money, and I imagine you won't be able to buy much of a Christmas hamper this year." And he produced a bag with a Christmas turkey, vegetables, and everything that was needed for an exquisite Christmas feast. But who are you?" Olivia asked. She had no idea what was happening. The man said, "I told you, my name is Jonathan Reynolds." No, but what's all this? What's the point of this?" "Well, you can see this white beard. People used to call me Santa Claus. Whenever I walked down the street, kids, people wanting to have a laugh, they'd always call me Santa Claus. I'm not really Santa Claus. I don't have reindeer, I don't have a sleigh, and I certainly don't have elves. And I don't live on the North Pole, although East London is cold enough to be. But then a while ago I had this mad idea. I know Santa Claus doesn't exist, but he's about making people happy at Christmas. And the world's full of misery at Christmas. The world's full of heartbreak and tragedy. And I thought, why don't I try and be him? I mean, I can't fix everything and I can't visit every house on December 24th. But maybe there's a few people that I know and maybe I could try and change things for them. So it started off, I knew there was a man that lived next to me. He had no friends or family, and always spent Christmas Day alone. So I went over there on Christmas Day, and I spent some time with him. I've never seen joy on someone's face like that. You know, over the years I've brought people hundreds of presents, and yet to see the joy on his face, that's something that I'd never seen before. And so I thought, well, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe we could try doing this next year and the year after. So for the last couple of years, that's what I do. And I've now got a group of helpers. And we try and find people who need help at Christmas. And if you just open your eyes, you'll find so many people. There are so many people that are struggling at Christmas. So many people that hate the season, and so many people that just want it to be over. But that's not the point of Christmas. Olivia couldn't believe what she was hearing. She knew the world was full of people that only cared about themselves and only wanted what was best for them. And yet here was this man that she had never met before that was talking about helping others and trying to make the world a better place. The man asked, "Well, as you know, it's Christmas Eve, and there are many, many people out there that are miserable and want something to be different. And I was wondering if you'd like to join my team. And I was wondering if perhaps we can try and put a smile on someone's face this Christmas." Just 5 minutes ago, Olivia was facing the worst Christmas she'd ever faced. The total humiliation of being arrested on Christmas Eve. And here was this man that was offering her a chance. Well, she didn't need to think twice about this. She took it immediately. Jonathan said, "I'm so glad. It's time now to go and find some people that need some Christmas cheer. And it's time now to make a truly happy Christmas for the few people that we can help." That's the end of part one. Join us again on Christmas Day as we conclude the story. Thank you so much for listening.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home.